From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from a blistering hot Monroe, Louisiana. This program would not be possible without the generous support of State of Belief listeners just like you. We're very thankful for every one of you. For more information on how you can help keep this show on the air, please visit stateofbelief.com. Now, here's what's coming up on this week's show.
The New Mexico Supreme Court had ruled against the two Christian photographers, stating that there is a price to pay for their faith, and it involves compromising their beliefs.
Much of the argument against marriage equality has been cleverly framed in terms of religious liberty. While deliberately pitting one segment of society against another is inherently wrong, it's even worse when it's being done in the name of religion. Still, that's been the big push from the far right, especially since the Supreme Court's pro-marriage equality ruling last month. At the same time, we've seen big business come out firmly on the side of equal rights to a degree that many of us found surprising. And now, a survey of small business owners shows a remarkable level of resistance to the rhetoric of religiously justified discrimination. On this week's show, we'll get details from Sally Steenland. She's with the Center for American Progress.
The governor of Oklahoma says the granite monument of the Ten Commandments will remain standing at the Capitol. The state Supreme Court ruled last week that the monument violates Oklahoma's constitution. But Governor Mary Phelan disagrees, saying the commandments will stay in place while the state appeals the ruling. And she says the legislature is considering changes to the Constitution to make it clear that the Ten Commandments monument is legally acceptable.
They made headlines in Alabama when Chief Justice Roy Moore defied federal court orders to take them down. In 2005, the Rehnquist Supreme Court said okay to their display in Texas, but no to them in Kentucky. And now in Oklahoma, a Ten Commandments monument on the state Capitol grounds has been ruled in violation of the state's constitution by the Oklahoma Supreme Court, only to have the governor say, let's keep them up while we appeal. We've got the latest on this, Thy Shalt Not-a-thon, from Tulsa Interfaith Alliance's Bob Lawrence. But first,
hello, I'm Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Planned Parenthood provides a full range of healthcare services to millions of women, men, and young people every year, including cancer screenings, birth control, STD testing and treatment, and abortion. Recently, an organization that opposes safe and legal abortion used secretly recorded, heavily edited videos to make outrageous claims about programs that help women donate fetal tissue for medical research. I want to be really clear. The allegation that Planned Parenthood profits in any way from tissue donation is not true.
Planned Parenthood is a national health care provider that offers vitally important services to millions of American women, primarily low-income women. Its services do include pregnancy termination, which has made Planned Parenthood public enemy number one for generations of conservatives. That's why a pair of secretly filmed videos of Planned Parenthood staff members discussing fetal tissue donations have been so exciting for the right wing. The videos, which the New York Times has labeled dishonest, have instantly become a rallying cry for legislators long committed to destroying Planned Parenthood. And in all honesty, the clinical language used in the videos is very uncomfortable for a non-medical person to hear, much less to defend. While we know we needed to cover this story on State of Belief, it was a struggle for us to figure out how to address it. And then I read a commentary by the Reverend Donna Scopper, a respected faith leader in New York City who's been on this show before. Published in Religion Dispatches magazine, it was headlined, Religion Lies in Videotape, Planned Parenthood, and the latest fake sting. As the ramifications of this continue to unfold, it seemed to be just the right tone for State of Belief Radio, where we work very hard not to fall into the simplistic, polarized kind of rhetoric that seems to dominate public discourse these days. And so I am grateful to be able to welcome Reverend Scopper back to State of Belief Radio. Donna, we welcome you back and look forward to this conversation.
Thank you.
Donna, you really seemed to take this latest attack on Planned Parenthood very personally.
Well, you got it right. I did take it personally because I love Planned Parenthood. I have seen so many of my parishioners and my friends' lives be helped by Planned Parenthood for many, many years. Full disclosure, I was a board member 15 years ago in Philadelphia, have not been formally affiliated since then, except by way of people who were in trouble who got help from them. And I just don't like it when people I know who are doing good get smeared for it.
There is a lot of dishonesty involved. And in fact, I want you to talk about, if you will, why it is so damaging, especially for religion, to engage in dishonesty.
It goes like this. Religious people have a real stake in getting as close to the truth as possible because so many people have done so much harm in the name of religion. Religion is about kindness and love and something like truth. We believe kindness and love and compassion are the truth. So when we have a situation of sneakiness, deceit, and distortion, it just brings us right back to our roots. Those of us who love Jesus because he was the one who refused to have an enemy, even those who persecuted him. And so my spiritual quest right now in this particular dust-up around the right to choose an abortion has to do with how I can be both loving and clear towards those who are using journalistic distortion. I'm not perfect here either. I don't want to go into hate or anger. I want to learn how to practice loving kindness. And I'm having a hard time because I think sneaky people need to be reined in and stopped in the very name of the love that Jesus showed us.
Yeah. So I was impressed, too, by the passion that I felt in your writing as you talked about this whole issue in terms of gender. How big a part of conflicts over reproductive rights do you ascribe to the fact that it is women that are served by Planned Parenthood?
I think it's unfortunately a big part. We're getting closer by the minute when women will be understood as full moral agents, when women will be understood as full human beings, as opposed to as people confined just to our reproductive role. I often talk about abortion in terms of a just war theory. We do imagine that there can be such a thing as just violence. So even if you thought abortion was a form of violence, which I do not, I think it's a moral elected choice that some people make some of the time for good reasons. But even if you thought it was a sin, or even if you thought it was violence, the idea that women can't make decisions about hard things, things that are very, very hard, the fact that women are beneath that kind of decision-making is just a sneaky way to put us down. And I do think that people on the religious right are having a hard time dealing with women as moral agents and as adults. There's an infantilization to it that, you know, bothers me as an adult.
Donna, you call yourself a proud relativist, and you seem to position that as the opposite of the kind of hypocrisy that wants to shut down Planned Parenthood but opposes any kind of gun control, for example. Talk about that identification, please.
In my congregation and in my 40 years of ministry, I have been trying to open the doors to people people who have been hurt by religion. Many of them call themselves none of the above, meaning get me away from institutional religion, it's just too mean. And so I am trying to argue that while religion is not perfect, and frankly, while no human being is perfect, male or female, right or left, we are all trying to be and do the best that we can. And when I find the awful pain that the freedom to have guns has caused, Sandy Hook, Charleston, I could go on.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why we aren't joining together to say, let's regulate guns and not women's reproductive system. Guns do violence. Guns do murder. So I'm looking for a way out of the religious hypocrisy into the maximum amount of religious sincerity that we can have. I do feel that religious hypocrisy is the biggest barrier to people's spiritual lives. They mm-hmm. just don't want to be a part of religious hypocrisy. And battling abortion in using these stealth methods, you go after the National Rifle Association that mm-hmm. way if you want to have, you know, do something that's good, that will save lives.
Donna, I have a great appreciation for the fact that you are an outstanding activist, but you also are really have a great expertise in addressing these issues from a pastoral perspective. And I want our listeners to know that and appreciate it as well. Would you talk about how you deal with these very difficult issues from the pulpit, from a pastoral perspective? The struggle with difficult choices is never an easy one, and I think knowing how you do that pastorally can be very helpful to a lot of people.
I'm trying to help people find their way to the grace of God and the immensity of God and God's love for us. I don't believe that God is finally a judge. I believe that God is finally one who loves us so much that God emptied power into us to be full human beings. God created science and technology so that we could not just have to populate and populate, that we are our biological lives plus. And I think it's a beautiful world, not a world that needs to be punished. I call, again, when I'm not being as good as I would like to be, I call the religious right punishmentalist. I have nothing wrong against fundamentals. I think we're all trying to get to the core values. Every day, we're trying to drive ourselves home to something that matters and something that's beautiful and something that's good. And I see my people struggling with that. They don't want to hear sermons about how if you just worked harder, you could be better.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you, you know, just were a nicer person, you'd be a happier person. They want to hear, wow, even God knows, even the pulpit knows that I'm not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that being perfect is not what God had in mind for you. Mm-hmm. God had in mind love and justice and fairness and beauty.
Well said. It's clear there are going to be congressional hearings and all kinds of attempts to destroy Planned Parenthood. A large amount of funding for Susan G. Komen, which is working to cure breast cancer, has been put on hold. Meanwhile, campaigns have begun to boycott corporations which donate to Planned Parenthood. What can people of goodwill do right now to try to help out Planned Parenthood and take this organization through this critical period?
Well, speak up. Note that 1 out of 5 American women has used Planned Parenthood, its services. Next time you're worried about the sexualization of youth, realize that Planned Parenthood is the strongest national organization doing excellent sex education, doing excellent work with people who have STDs. They're doing excellent work on so many fronts in addition to abortion. And they're a place to go to deal with sexuality in moral ways, to speak up on behalf of them, make a contribution to Planned Parenthood. But join the conversation and don't let them be smeared. You know, the thing that hurts people the most is when somebody else attacks them and nobody speaks up. That is painful. Sad enough to be attacked. You've experienced it, I'm sure, in your own life. Mm-hmm. But you sort of, where is everybody? I have enormous trust in the strong, good heart of the American people, men and women, right and left. And I believe that heart will prevail, even in this kind of scummy, silly business of stealth journalism. That, you know, if they have good arguments, use them. Why go undercover? Why sneak around like this? It's manipulating the citizenry and manipulating democracy, too.
The Reverend Dr. Donna Scopper is Senior Minister of Judson Memorial Church in New York City. Her most recent books are Approaching the End of Life, A Spiritual and Practical Guide, and Prayers for People Who Think They Can't. Reverend Scopper's column on the latest attack on Planned Parenthood appeared in Religion Dispatches magazine under the headline Religion, Lies, and Videotape, Planned Parenthood, and the Latest Fake Sting. And we will put that up for all of you to see on stateofbelief.com. Donna, we're always talking about difficult subjects. That's a big part of why this kind of attack on Planned Parenthood is so powerful. You've offered a very articulate response, as you always do, and I want to thank you for what you have written and for what you do every day in trying to help people understand the goodness of God and the way in which we can make our way through these very difficult moments. And thank you also for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. Always good to talk to you.
In 2012, an Oklahoma state representative paid to erect a Ten Commandments monument in front of the state capitol. Destroyed last year by vandals, the memorial was quickly rebuilt. Most recently, the Oklahoma Supreme Court ruled that display of the religious imagery on government property violated the state's constitution. But so far, Governor Mary Fallon says, "Thou shalt not touch the monument." Among those calling for respect for the rule of law has been the American Civil Liberties Union of Oklahoma, which filed that current case, as well as the Interfaith Alliance of Oklahoma and Tulsa Interfaith Alliance. With me now on the phone is the Reverend Bob Lawrence, Executive Director of Tulsa Interfaith Alliance. Bob, thanks for being with us today on State of Belief.
Thank you for the invitation. Good to be here.
So, Bob, what the heck is going on in Oklahoma with this monument?
Actually, there's a lot of us that are asking that exact same question. The primary challenge has been that under Oklahoma law, it's part of the Blaine Amendment, that states in our Constitution that we are not allowed to use public funds or public property to benefit any particular religious sect or teaching or doctrine. Mm-hmm. And this particular decision is basically against that, as based upon that. And we're looking at the idea that we are using a part of our Capitol grounds to display a monument that is meant to highlight one particular type of political and religious thought.
Mm-hmm. So what's been the reaction to the governor saying she wants to appeal?
The majority reaction has been supportive of the governor's stance on this. But we are also a majority Christian state. Mm-hmm. And that is the exact protection that this was put in place in our Constitution to try to prevent is the majority faith taking over and making decisions that might impinge upon the rights and abilities of others to practice their own faith or to access government in this case. What is being proposed at this point is actually changing the Oklahoma Constitution to remove that portion of the Constitution. There's also been talk about possibly changing the way Supreme Court justices are selected and or retained in Oklahoma. And then there, of course, is the obvious bit of appealing this to another jurisdiction. But the reality is, since the case is based upon Oklahoma law, chances of it going anywhere else are pretty slim.
Okay, let's take a complicated situation and make it a little more complicated. Enter the Satanic Temple. What's the story there?
Yes, that was a very interesting development. Basically, what the Satanic Temple stated was that if we are going to allow the display of a monument that benefits or that highlights Judeo-Christian teachings, then they felt it appropriate for them to be able to erect a monument in the same area of our Capitol grounds that would highlight the teachings of their faith tradition. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, that did not go very far, but it is still part of what is being discussed. As long as the Ten Commandments monument is removed, then, of course, that whole question is moot. But the idea that if one faith tradition can impose their teachings on our Capitol grounds, then our function as a government should allow for the display of religious teachings of any faith tradition.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I was out in California not too long ago and talking to a group of Buddhists out there who told me that in California, if this issue came up, they had decided they wanted to post commandments on the property of the government as well, but they couldn't think of but eight. Now, I say that as a diversion and a recognition that we're talking about something very, very serious. I'm glad
yes.
Interfaith Alliance of Tulsa has been involved in this. Tell us how you have responded to this issue.
We have been trying to raise awareness of the issue and not allow it to fall out of media attention. And basically what we're doing is we issued a joint press release with the National Interfaith Alliance, as well as the Oklahoma City affiliate, Interfaith Alliance of Oklahoma, a joint statement basically calling on Governor Fallon to abide by the Supreme Court decision and to go ahead and remove the monument. Our organizations have always been against this particular action. We come from the standpoint as people of faith that there is an appropriate place, an appropriate time for monuments to our faith traditions to be erected, but that we believe that it is also important for us as citizens of this country to recognize that there are spiritual teachings, there are faith traditions that inform our decisions as government, as private citizens, that are not of the Judeo-Christian tradition. And so our concern is that by having the Ten Commandments there, that basically what we're saying is any other form of religious thought, any other spiritual teaching that helps to inform our government as well as our individuals in making decisions about policy and law and that stuff, what we're saying is that the primacy goes to the Judeo-Christian tradition and these others don't really count. We don't believe that that is what our legislators are trying to say with what they're doing. We don't believe that that is what the majority of Oklahomans want our government to say. And so we're basically just asking the governor to recognize that that is part of the message of having the Ten Commandments monument there on the Capitol and to go ahead and follow the Supreme Court decision and say that that needs to go.
Bob, what kind of reactions to this whole controversy are you seeing across the state?
Across the state, we are seeing, as one might expect, extremes in both directions. We're seeing those who are saying that Governor Fallon's action crosses into illegal action and appropriate steps should be taken, all the way to those that are asking, who are suggesting that we evict the mm-hmm. entire Supreme Court mm-hmm. and put all new people on the Supreme Court mm-hmm. and make the Supreme Court a subsidiary of the state legislature. So there's a wide range. Our experience is that most of the citizens are saying that this is not something we want on our Capitol grounds, mm-hmm. that we may, as individuals, use those principles to guide our daily lives, but that we do not want that to be the emphasis of our government.
Yeah. So, Bob, the Ten Commandments monument at the state capitol is certainly a cause for contention, but you face any number of other challenges in Oklahoma. If you will, talk about the Charter for Compassion.
Thank you. I'd love to. The Tulsa Interfaith Alliance has been working with the city of Tulsa, primarily through their Human Rights Commission, to have Tulsa recognized by the International Charter for Compassion Committee as a compassionate community. And what that does is basically we are raising awareness of compassion. We believe that Tulsa is already, and Oklahoma as well, on an individual basis, how the citizens treat one another, compassion is very high in people's regards. And what we want to do is begin to highlight that and to get people to look at the notion that compassion, as Karen Armstrong identified in her work on the Charter for Compassion, that compassion is at the core of all of the world's religious, ethical, and spiritual teachings. Mm-hmm. The notion that I will do to others only what I would expect them to do to me. Mm-hmm. The golden rule, we would call it in my tradition. And what we've been doing is trying to raise that awareness here in Tulsa. We did get the city council to adopt unanimously a resolution to that end, and then the mayor signed that 2 weeks ago. And so we are now busy forming a committee with a 10-year objective of trying to raise the awareness of compassion that already exists in Tulsa and surrounding communities, and then also to increase the prevalence of compassionate action so that we can effect change in our world based upon a notion of compassion.
Let me just take a second to say parenthetically to our listeners, this would be a good time for you to check out past broadcasts of this program. We had Karen Armstrong on when she first began this initiative on compassion, did an hour interview with her. It should still be in the archives. I'd encourage you to listen to it, and I'm really glad that Tulsa Interfaith Alliance is taking this work up. What about other issues and initiatives in Tulsa that you're working on now?
Our primary objective in Tulsa is to work with other partner agencies, work with our government, to be sure that each of us as people of faith, even those of no faith, can freely practice our religion and continue to be involved and engaged in our government, as well as involved in our personal faith. So along those lines, we've been working with the Muslim community and participated in the Muslim Day at the Capitol a few months back. In fact, thinking about today's weather, it's kind of strange that most of us wound up with near frostbite on that particular day back in February. We were complaining about the freezing weather, and now today we're complaining about the heat and humidity. That bit of empowering and encouraging our fellow Muslim citizens to participate in government is one of our initiatives as well.
You know, Bob, I've always appreciated so much both Interfaith Alliances in Oklahoma. I think there are a lot of people who have stereotypes about how universally conservative that part of the country is. That is simply not my experience. And so I'd like you to take just a second and say something about the folks that support Interfaith Alliance in Tulsa.
Thank you. Yes, you're absolutely right. I've only been in Oklahoma 6 years. I'm originally from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was called here to pastor a church. And you might imagine that I came here under the idea that I would help teach these people how to be compassionate citizens. I got here, and I was the one that was taught. Tulsa and Oklahoma is truly an amazing place where people are really interested in creating a future for our children and grandchildren. We're interested in taking care of one another. And the people that are supporting the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance in particular, some of whom are conservative from even a religious and political standpoint, our primary purpose and what people are really excited about doing is trying to make sure that each of us can continue to practice our religion as we believe it is necessary.
Bob, tell our listeners who are interested how they could keep up with your work at the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance.
We have a website at TulsaInterfaithAlliance.org where people can check up on us. We also have the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance Facebook page. Like most organizations now, our Facebook is a little more active. And that is available at Tulsa Interfaith Alliance, 3 words. And then we also have a Twitter account, Tulsa Interfaith, that people can use to follow us. We try to issue press releases and policy statements at least once a month about issues that are important to us and to the people of Oklahoma. So that would be ways that people could get onto those lists and find out about that.
The Reverend Bob Lawrence is Executive Director of the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance. After the Oklahoma governor announced she would not abide by the state Supreme Court's ruling on a Ten Commandments monument on the Capitol grounds, the group joined with the Interfaith Alliance of Oklahoma and the National Interfaith Alliance to object to this continued favoring of one religion over others in a public property setting. Bob, you've talked about what you're doing. It's great work. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio, and I encourage you to keep up the good work you all are doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and appreciate the work you are doing as well.
We've all heard the stories of the bakery that ran out of dough after the owners were fined for being Bible-believing Christians. The photographer, whose deeply held fundamentalist beliefs were exposed, the anti-gay right has done all it can do to highlight these rare instances and to encourage businesses and government officials to add to them. There's a manufactured debate going on in our country right now where an absolutist definition of religious liberty makes civilized participation in a pluralistic society and marketplace impossible almost. The good news is, beyond the rare poster children for this supposedly irreconcilable conflict, American big business has calmly moved to the forefront of supporting equal rights for LGBT persons. And most American small businesses, it turns out, have no interest in discriminating either. That's the finding of a recent survey sponsored by Center for American Progress, Small Business Majority, and American Unity Fund. And joining me right now is Sally Steenland, Director of CAPS Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative. Sally, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. Well, and it's so good to be back, and it's good to talk with you today.
I find this survey really encouraging. So tell us, what are the key takeaways of what you found?
We did a poll to actually try to get the facts about small business owners and whether they, in fact, are rising up en masse and refusing to serve LGBT customers when it comes to weddings or not, because that's certainly what we hear. Selling a cake is, you know, like every baker doesn't want to do that. And so we were like, well, really, just what are the facts? So we did a poll, and we looked at small business owners across the country. 8 in 10 of them had fewer than 10 employees. So these were small business owners. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we found that there is great support. A majority of small business owners think that it's wrong to refuse to provide services to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender customers, especially when it's related to a wedding. They don't want overly broad religious exemptions that should allow for anti-LGBT discrimination. So, in fact, the results of that poll are very, very encouraging.
Yeah, they are. Sally, did you survey beyond small business to a little larger businesses as well?
Well, this actually focused on small businesses because that's where we've heard
right.
the outcry. It's been the florist, it's been the baker, it's been the photographer, you know, those small folks. And just let me say, in terms of what their ideological mm-hmm. beliefs were, 47% of them, so nearly half of them, were either Republican or Republican-leaning. So this is not, you know, a hand-picked liberal crowd by mm-hmm. any means. And I think what this reflects is just common sense, really, which is if your doors are open and if you're licensed to serve the public, that's what you do. You mm-hmm. serve the public. Mm-hmm. And you don't turn somebody away who walks in the door based on who they are. And the other thing I think people just really understand is that if you bake a cake for someone, if you sell flowers to someone, small businesses do that to all kinds of people, and they don't give them a litmus test on morality to say, well, do you watch pornography? Do you gamble? Is this your third wedding? You know, they don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's quite understood that selling a cake or selling flowers is not a moral stamp of approval on what anybody may be doing. Mm-hmm. And I will say also that many of these small business owners, I believe it was 63% of them, identified as being Christian. And of that, 25% said they were born again or evangelical. So again, this kind of challenges the false notion that many folks are putting out that this is trampling religious beliefs or that small business owners have a really strong opposition to this kind of interaction with the public.
You know, I don't want to generalize beyond where I should go with that, but this survey, along with several others, just makes me curious about whether or not we really had accurate information about how much opposition there really has been related to these issues. Do you have that same suspicion?
That's really true. Sometimes I feel it's like, you know, that scene in The Wizard of Oz where they, you know, the mighty Oz is speaking and then they pull back the curtain and it's just a little person working a lot of machines with smoke and mirrors. And I sometimes wonder if that's it, because certainly, and I'm sure you must know when you travel the country and when you talk to people, there is a certain decency, there's a certain respect for human dignity and a familiarity with who our neighbors and friends and coworkers are that I think has really moved in a very encouraging way. And so I think the country is in many ways ahead of where the religious right would like to stay. I think our moral imagination has really grown. And so when you lose in the courts, when you lose in the legislature, when you lose in the culture, and you lose a critical mass of public support, what are you left with? Well, then you've got to come up with this apocalyptic language mm-hmm. and these folks who are, you know, supposedly victims. But that just simply doesn't hold up upon closer inspection.
There is a new legislative initiative that I find really exciting that I want to ask you about. I know in Congress this past week, it got a lot of attention. I'm referring to the Equality Act, which replaces and expands the long-stalled Employment Non-Discrimination Act that you and I and others have worked on for years and years, ENDA we called it. What should our listeners know about the Equality Act?
Well, it's a historic day today. Well, even as we speak on Capitol Hill, a few miles away from me, the Equality Act is being introduced right now by members of Congress, by allies, and by folks who've experienced everyday discrimination in their lives. And so what we know is this is the next step towards guaranteeing full equality and justice for all of America's citizens, that the marriage ruling by the court was thrilling and was greatly needed, but it was just one piece of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so, as many people say, you could get married on Saturday and get fired on Monday. Yeah. And the Equality Act is needed for many reasons. And I think what's important for people to know is that we don't have federal comprehensive non-discrimination protections against our LGBT brothers and sisters in this country. A lot of people, it just feels like common sense. Like, you could get legally fired from your job. You could be denied housing. You could be turned away from a store or a restaurant. And the truth is, depending on your zip code, you can. Mm-hmm. And so that's number one, why we need the law. And number two is that kind of discrimination is real and is pervasive. So at the press conference today is a married couple, two women from Michigan, and their story is a case in point as to why we need this law. They had a baby and had handpicked their pediatrician. And when their baby girl was 6 days old, they went to the pediatrician, and there was another doctor there, not the one they had picked. And when they inquired why, they found out that the pediatrician, when she discovered that this 6-day-old baby had two moms, refused to see the baby and refused to treat her. And that was legal because Michigan does not have a state anti-discrimination law. So those kinds of things. And ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, was one piece of that. It covered employment, but it didn't cover housing. It didn't cover public accommodations, which are all the other aspects of our lives. And, you know, the folks involved in the bill, they're calling it Back to the Future because, and I did not know this, in 1974, the Equality Act was first introduced in Congress. So that's like 41 years ago. So here we are back today, and it's a very, very thrilling day.
Are you going to hear the same kind of arguments that we've heard in the past related to ENDA, or is it going to take us beyond that, hoping that what we have seen coming from the Supreme Court is going to give not only just another backdrop, but something new in thinking about policy as well?
Well, I'm sure we will hear criticism from the same crowd when this bill is introduced. I would be surprised if that didn't happen around grounds of religious liberty, which I would say are not justified at all. What the Equality Act does is it amends sections of existing legislation, such as the Housing Act. So it's protections that already exist, and it just adds sexual orientation and gender identity to those categories around discrimination. There are robust religious exemptions in existing law, and this bill certainly respects those. But what it doesn't allow for are overly broad, sweeping religious exemptions that let people cause harm to others by what they claim is exercising their beliefs. So in other words, instead of just practicing your faith, you're trying to stop what other people are doing, whether it's getting married or staying in a hotel or having a job or whatever it might be, because you feel that for those people to do that is an affront to your religious liberty. And that really crosses a line, and that's coercive. I think there's strong support and understanding around that. And we at Center for American Progress are releasing statements from faith leaders supporting comprehensive non-discrimination protections from a point of faith. I think one of the things that's so troubling, and Welton, you've been so eloquent on this, is that artificial dichotomy that people often pose, that it's religion versus civil rights, or it's religious liberty versus LGBTQ rights, as if you have to choose, or as if they're inherently opposed. And we know that's not the case, and we know that for millions of Americans, they support LGBT equality because of their faith.
Yeah. My sense this summer emotionally has been I've felt like I was on a roller coaster, sometimes up and sometimes down. Are you hopeful? Are you reservedly hopeful? Are you pessimistic? about what's going to be coming up in the months ahead?
Well, what I do know is the things we can control for and the things we know about, but there are always things that happen that are unforeseen, that are out of our control, and then it's like, how do we respond and how mm-hmm. do we work with those things? Yeah. I am energized. I am enthusiastic. I think that there's more concern than ever within faith communities and more movement on issues like economic inequality, like climate, LGBT equality, women's health. And I think people are seeing the connections, how they're all connected with each other, because we don't lead siloed lives. And I think that the presidential campaign next year and already starting mm-hmm. now is highlighting some of these issues as well as distorting some of them. And so I think it's very important for us, first of all, to call out what we believe are distortions, but not just that, not just be calling people out, but then to say what it is we're for mm-hmm. And what is our vision and what is our moral compass and what do we see as a more just and merciful society. And I think people are doing that eloquently. You know, you probably know it better than I do because I think in Washington things are so stuck that you can get discouraged, but when I hear about what folks are doing in communities around the country, I am incredibly inspired.
Mm. By the way, we're going to link to the findings of the Small Business Owner Poll through stateofbelief.com. Sally, thanks for the work that you do, and thanks so much for joining us again on State of Belief Radio.
Fulton, thank you so much. Take good care.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, and I know some of you have, I want to say a very sincere thank you. The ongoing financial support of our listeners is essential to keeping this show on the air. If you find value in what you're hearing here, and if you think it's important that more people hear what you're hearing, I urge you to join our other generous supporters right now. Please. Visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcasts and find links mentioned during the show. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and please share the stories that you find compelling with your friends. We need more listeners because we want a larger conversation. This is about the entirety of our nation, not just a part of it. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And please be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was.